Welcome to the SIS Off the Charts Football Podcast. I am your host, Bryce Rossler, and joining me this evening for our semi-live first round show are my colleague, Matt Manicharian, disgraced former host of this podcast, and our good friend, Derek Klassen of Bleacher Report, Reception, and the Summoner's Rift, longtime friend of the show, joining us again. How are we doing this evening, fellas?
I'm doing good. We have we've got a couple in here that I'm excited to get to. I'll say that.
As we are recording this, the Packers pick is being run to the podium, so we are not reacting in real time, but you guys will just have to deal with that.
Sort of are reacting in real time, right?
No, because do we think we catch up by pick 32?
Let's see how it goes.
Well, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Okay, so first four picks, pretty chalk. Caleb Williams to the Bears was the worst kept secret in the NFL. I think the conversation, we can talk about Caleb Williams real quick. Derek, you and I talked at length about Williams, maybe it was a couple of months ago at this point, in our quarterback episode. We, I think, came to the agreement that he and May are 1A, 1B. Matt, do you have anything negative to say here? Do you want to be...
I have no disagreement whatsoever. Quarterbacks are quarterbacks. We're judging people that there aren't 32 good ones, and we're reaching for them, and that's probably going to be a theme.
We are reaching for them.
No, in terms of when you evaluate the prospects, I think Caleb Williams was that dude, and for me, I had May above anybody else in the class. So surprised that Daniels went ahead of May in like the grand scheme, obviously not based on the betting odds and things. I see it. The way you guys stayed with Williams and May is 1A, 1B.
Yeah, I said this when I talked to Derek about this a few episodes ago. I really wanted to not like Williams. And when you watch on TV copy, there's a lot of stuff that you could knock him for just at a glance, like the out of structure stuff. He was first in our expected snap to throw plus minus percentile. Or he was first percentile in our expected snap to throw plus minus. But when you actually watch on film, there's a lot of good procedural stuff from within structure, the arm talent. And the athletic ability is obviously crazy. So unfortunately, the Bears probably got a good one. The Daniels pick, I don't know. I felt like, I know that was reported for a really long time that they were honing in on Daniels, but I kind of felt like I was being gaslit about that.
I tweeted like a month ago that like I just simply do not buy that Jaden Daniels, five-year starter, whose arm is like fine, is going to go over Drake May, who's 21 years old, just super athlete, super arm talent. Like Drake May was the prototype the NFL has fallen for as long as the league has existed. So I just couldn't believe that Jaden Daniels was going to go ahead of him. But then as the process went along, I kind of just accepted the fact that Washington is incompetent and they were not going to make the right pick, and they did.
So you don't think there's any chance that Daniels ends up better than May? Like, you'll say that definitively?
I'm
with you, but I'm...
Yeah, I would say pretty definitively. Like, there's always a shot. Like, you never know with draft prospects, but, like, I don't even have them even close to the same tier of players. Like, you know, like we were just talking about, Caleb and Drake to me are 1A, 1B. You take either of those players that are first overall in any class, and you don't even think about it. They're that caliber of prospect. Jaden Daniels, to me, was more of, like, late first, early second. You can win games with these type of guys. They can be your Andy Daltons, your Derek Carrs, your, like, you know, your Teddy Bridgewaters. Like, these are functional, good, useful players. But it was just hard for me to see any of, like, the truly, like, top eight, this guy can maybe be an all-pro type of talent in a guy like Jaden Daniels. And because the thing is, people are always going to bring up Lamar Jackson with Jaden Daniels because of the build and all that stuff. Lamar's pocket presence was so much better. Like, it's just not even close. And he was making way more NFL throws, I think, at college. So I just didn't really get the comparisons at all.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I think you're kind of hoping for something that I think is unlikely. I'm going to acknowledge, like, we don't know, like, the way that it can all pan out. It can depend on so many different factors and all this kind of stuff. And heck, maybe when you get into a room with him, you're able to understand things about him that we can't just see from the film. And that's a big part of the scouting process, but I'm with you. It seems to me like for years and years and years, we wanted quarterbacks that were big and strong and strong-armed, and all of a sudden, something happened where Drake May was considered a different way. I've seen his bad plays on film, but at the same time, his upside, it screams Justin Herbert. And listen, that doesn't mean it's going to end up like that. But I think when you're drafting at number two, I think if you're more like an NBA team at that point. You're drafting for somebody who can be that dude, that reason why you win games. And I could see May being a reason why you win. For me, Daniels, I feel like maybe has a little bit of a higher floor.
So we are in agreement about that. Are we surprised that the Pats stayed put? I wasn't really surprised by that.
Yeah, I wasn't, because it was Drake May. Like, if Washington had taken May and then maybe right. New England was talking with Daniels and McCarthy, I could have seen a trade, or maybe they just take Marvin. I don't know. But with Drake May being there, it was like, hey, he's just too good. Too good.
The speaking of
tough Marvin, situation, though, potentially. Tough situation.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you're taking a raw quarterback who's played 20 games and then he's going into, like, the cupboard is bare on offense. So as much as I like one player over the other in terms of May and Daniels, that situation's even worse.
Yeah, it's not great. But I think that they'll be all right. And I think, I don't know, I kind of have this theory about, quote unquote, ruining young quarterbacks. And I think a lot of it probably has to do with the type of expectations that are put on them to succeed early. I think the experience is generally a good thing. But if, for example, the coaching is really bad and there's a lot of pressure to...
So what's your theory here? Wait, what is your theory?
I think that New England is trying to build them.
What's your theory about young quarterbacks? Sorry.
I don't buy, like, the you shouldn't, or you should avoid starting a guy in a bad situation or a guy who's not ready because it'll ruin him. I don't buy that.
I agree with you. You don't have to, like, sit a guy for a year, but it's better to be in a good situation than a bad situation.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to argue that.
Yeah, I honestly, what ends up more the issue with, like, ruining quarterbacks is just, like, fundamentally misunderstanding what they are. Like, I feel like we saw this with Justin Fields in Chicago, where, I mean, obviously the players around him were terrible, but, like, they tried to make him at first just, like, shotgun, RPO, quick game, like, empty quarterback. And it's like, who did you think that you drafted? Like, this just doesn't make any sense. And obviously, you know, they changed the offense and he got a little bit better, but not enough. But it was like from the jump, they just didn't seem like they understood what they drafted.
Evaluate the players in your own building. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think May will be fine. So fairly chalk top three. The Cardinals, it fell perfectly for them. Marvin Harrison Jr., it fills a huge need. They haven't had a decent receiver since in the Kyler Murray era, since like 2020 DeAndre Hopkins. And then Hopkins fell off, and I think by total points, like the third best Cardinals receiving season was Christian Kirk in 21, which,
my God,
not great. So Matt, we did that pod a week or so ago. Maybe it was last week. I don't know. My Rolodex of episodes is not great, but we talked about how you don't want to draft for need, but this definitely fills a need. It's a premier position. It's the best player. I think he's easily the best non-quarterback in the draft.
Yeah, you're not drafting for need when you're drafting the best non-quarterback in the draft, right? Yeah.
Right. It just happened to also be a need for them.
You don't want to avoid filling a need either, right?
Yeah. So I think that's A+ for the Cardinals. A no-brainer. They ran it to the podium. No notes. Nobody has notes?
I mean, it's Marvin Harrison Jr., man. He was top player on my board, not even close. So, like, nothing to say. He's going to be great.
All right. So I think where the draft really got interesting was the Chargers at 5. There was some talk about maybe trading out of the pick that they were open for business. They ended up taking Joe Alt out of Notre Dame. I really like that pick. I know that a lot of Chargers fans wanted Malik Nabers, and I understand why they wanted that. But my counterpoint would be Trey Pipkins. So you now have two bookend tackles for Herbert. Joe Alt is very, very smooth player in pass protection. I don't have a lot of gripes with this one.
Neither do I. I mean, it's Jim Harbaugh. Like, what did people think was going to happen? Like, they could have taken Nabers. They could have taken Odunze. They would have been fine. But, like, yeah, man, Jim Harbaugh is going to build through the trenches. And I know, like, everybody says that. But, like, yeah, it's Jim Harbaugh. That's what he's going to want to do. This is a team that's going to want to run the ball. They're going to want to throw play action. They're going to need guys who can move people on the ground and then hold up in pass protection. And Joel can clearly do that. And then, obviously, Rashawn Slater on the other side. So, the interior is not great, but when you have bookends like that, you can kind of fix the other problems with like a domino effect kind of. So I liked it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like first Harbaugh comes in and, okay, we have this great quarterback, young guy, try to figure out how to build around that. He gets rid of both of the receivers that everybody wants him to keep around, keeps both of the edge rushers, the D-line players that can affect the opposing quarterback around that everybody thought, okay, we'll do one and one, something like that. And now here we're into the draft and he's not drafting a receiver. He's doing what Jim Harbaugh does. It makes total sense. Alt is a phenomenal prospect, like all pro Hall of Fame type upside. And I think the floor is pretty high too. So, I mean, this pick just makes so much sense to me. And the story of the top six picks in the draft really is like very rational drafting, in my opinion, from the top six teams. Like, I'm usually having like a Daniel Jones head scratcher that I'm used to, that crappy defensive end that the Raiders took a few years ago, something like that. Cleveland Farrell. This year, I kind of agreed with all six. I'd switch the order of number two and number three at quarterback. But besides that, yeah, like you said, Bryce, no notes.
Yep. So speaking of Daniel Jones, I was kind of upset that the Giants didn't do the funny thing and take J.J. McCarthy, as you alluded to, another pretty rational decision. I like the Neighbors pick. I've said before on previous episodes that I don't think Neighbors and Harrison was really a conversation, but in most other draft classes, this is a guy who'd be wide receiver one, extremely athletic. I think there's some things he could polish up in his route running, but still pretty solid in that area. It's just not funny. It doesn't make for good content. We're burying the lead here. We're getting close, but it's just not funny.
It was the pick that I think everybody thought that they were going to make. What I will say is,
you thought they wouldn't take J.J. McCarthy?
He's J.J. McCarthy. I don't know.
And they're the Giants.
That's okay. That's a good point. They've done this before with probably a worse prospect than Daniel Jones. The thing I want to say about Neighbors though is I think people, because he's this, you know, top 10 type of receiver, I think people lock him into being like, oh, if you take a top 10 receiver, he's probably like an X receiver. He's really not. Like, he's kind of this slot hybrid, like kind of does the Jalen Waddle, Amari Cooper, plays a little bit inside outside, but he's not like your true outside the numbers, like ball winner type. He's definitely more like he's a yak guy. He can get open. Like you said, his route running, he kind of gets open more because he's just incredibly explosive, but he's, you know, could still clean some stuff up. And he can track the ball down the field. But like I said, he's really more of a yak guy more than anything, which to me is kind of a funny fit for the Giants because I thought they needed a true X in Odunze and they didn't take him. But like you said, Neighbors is still a fantastic prospect. So it'll probably work out in the end.
Yeah, the stats back up what you're talking about, Derek. In terms of, you know, looking at a statistical profile, 48% in the slot this year. So very much mixed between lining up outside, lining up in a reduced split, and running really an incredible number of unique routes over the course of his career at LSU. So definitely like a lot of tricks in the tool bag type player, not like your standard, just line him up out there and we're going to go ISO.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty good for, generally speaking, I think that's pretty good from a roster building perspective, is having that guy that you can fit into your receiver room the way you need to. Because I don't,
you know what? There's something to be said for both. Like, honestly, I think he's such a high-end player that he's going to change what everybody else in your receiver room is based on him being the kind of the Michael Jordan of the bunch. But like, generally speaking, I think there's an interesting conversation to be had about like which wide receiver skill sets we value more than another. Because typically, I'd probably say I'd rather have the true X skill set than like the kind of versatile guy, just based on rarity, the positional scarcity again. There's a conversation to be had there.
I kind of lean towards the X receiver thing too. It's why I had Odunze actually as wide receiver too. There's just a little bit, to me, it just seems a little bit easier. That's the type of player that to me is easier to like fall back on. Whereas some of these players that need a little bit of extra help, I feel like, I don't know, you can still obviously have great offense around them. Like CeeDee Lamb is kind of like this. Amon Ross St. Brown is like this. Like you can still make them really, really good players. It's just, I'd rather have like the Davante Adams or just like a Mike Evans where it's like, yep, I know exactly what I'm getting every time and he's just going to be open.
So do you think that the bankability of that skill set is more due to the skill set itself or the fact that you have to do a bit of extra work with somebody like Neighbors, who you might move around a little bit more. You have to think a bit more on how to deploy them.
I think to me, it's a little bit easier because either way, you're going to have to like, you know, slot in the other players around them. I think to me, it's a little bit easier to have your true X and then slot in your role players elsewhere with your, you know, speed guy, your slot guy, your Z adjuster, whatever you want to call it, than it is to like have the CD Lamb or whatever, and then have to like fill in whatever you're doing it at X. Like that to me is just, I think, a little bit trickier. And I think it limits your offense in some ways. And I think we've even seen that with teams like the Lions. Like, they run a great offense, but when Amon Ross St. Brown is your leading receiver, like the offense, it's a little bit limited in what it's allowed to do because it doesn't have a true X receiver.
How do you think about the Dolphins in that context?
I think Tyreek is just kind of one on one.
He's just so like, special, it's ridiculous.
It kind of like
might be what you're betting on with Malik Neighbors, though, in a way, right?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But yeah, like Tyreek is to me in like a different, like he's in a unicorn category where it's like, okay, break the rule and that's totally fine. I think in the best of worlds, Neighbors could maybe be something close to that. And that's, I think, what the Giants are betting on. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Fully agree.
What do you think the floor is for him?
For Neighbors?
Yeah.
Be deep threat.
Yeah, like I don't know if I have a player in mind, but like 850 yards, like kind of inconsistent, but really good with the ball in his hands, really good down the field. But not
that was in the Raiders, who's in prison now.
Henry Ruggs.
Well, that's his floor. I'm just saying, like, you want floor?
On the field, at least.
I don't like it. We're going to move on to J.C. Latham to the Titan.
Love it.
I love it. Yeah, I think Latham is awesome, man. I think his perception suffered a little bit just because he's so big. And at this point, people are used to seeing, like, or wanting to see guys like Penei Sewell, who are more like athletically built as opposed to just mountainous human beings. But I really like I think he's a really technical player. I like the control, especially for his size, good in pass pro, can blow you off the ball in the run game. I had him and all like 1A, 1B. The hand uses, like, that shit's crazy. Like, he puts, like, once he latches on, like, it's done. Like, rep over. And those, I don't know, maybe I'm a little partial to guys that are like that, but I really like that player.
I mean, the only thing I have to add there is if Tennessee didn't take a tackle, it would have been absolutely criminal. So I'm very glad that they did the right thing.
Yeah. So when we looked into these tackle prospects, we did a little bit of a special project this year where we dove into, on a play-by-play level, every offensive lineman, all the top offensive line prospects over the course of the last 2 years, and looking at not just did they win the block, did they lose the block, but how did they win, how did they lose, and what skills did they display in a very true scouting sense. And then we did this kind of proprietary project, and now that we're here after the draft, or at least after the first round, I feel comfortable talking about him about it. J.C. Latham really stood out in terms of the metrics, in terms of what he produced. He was somebody who, when you looked at his profile, it really matched the eye test in what you saw from this player, you know, in a good way. But also the skills that he displayed, like if you're looking for somebody that's kind of like your prototypical right tackle prospect, not to say he can't play on the left side, but really, really good anchor strength, stood out, you know, was standard deviations above the mean in terms of what he was doing in that regard. And then also his bad play percentage was very low relative to the other players that we saw on the list. So it was an interesting use of the statistical exercise. It certainly shined a light on me on him as a prospect and made me want to dive in more. And I love the pick. I think it's awesome that he went there.
Now we get to the fun stuff. Michael Penix Jr., 8th overall for the Atlanta Falcons.
Nope. No.
Where do we not start?
I don't know, man. Like,
okay. I think you have to go all the way back to the 2023 draft when the Lions took Hendon Hooker 68th overall, another very old prospect with knee issues who wasn't very good. Let's start there.
Penix is better than Hendon Hooker. Like,
I think he's better than Hendon Hooker. But also, I was like,
I don't do
incredibly low on Hendon Hooker.
I saw that we got Tony Romo in the house. Okay, so Penix, just talking about him, in my opinion, a little bit of an older prospect, but you have to take into account the injury history, obviously, you have to take into account. Clearly, that wasn't something that they were concerned about here. And, you know, like, that's awesome as far as I'm concerned. I'm happy that that wasn't something that was going to derail him, because I don't have the, you know, the ability to poke and prod the medicals and all that. You love his ability to push the ball down the field, the deep ball. I was surprised by the way he performed in terms of his testing numbers, more athletic than I gave him credit for, certainly on the film, you know, which doesn't really change my opinion of him on the film, but it speaks positively in a way. But the thing that I had trouble with, and I'm a lefty myself, so I don't have any lefty hate, but
you're not a self-hating lefty.
I'm not, but I found that his release was a bit elongated. And yeah, I'm not somebody that's ever going to criticize like the arm slot that somebody throws from. Like, I don't really care. You get the ball where you're trying to go and I'm good with it. But I didn't know how scalable the way that he puts the ball out was to the NFL. If he can consistently get the ball out the way that he does, and you know, like, hey, Chad Pennington, it took him 10 minutes to get the ball out, but he was so good at anticipating that he was able to do it. So I'm not saying it's impossible, but that's the part for me that I was like, this doesn't seem like a first round prospect. This seems like, okay, late first, I would have gotten it, but he really felt like the second round prospect. And man, I know it's hard to find a quarterback, but I think we're pumping these guys up a little bit at this point.
Yeah, I just don't think the anticipation is there with him to compensate for that. And Derek and I talked about this on the pod we do, which I keep referring to, but the ability to throw with that type of throwing motion with bodies around him is not good. Out of 122 FBS quarterbacks with 200 plus attempts, the number of his hurried attempts that resulted in throws from within the pocket ranked 2/3.
From within the pocket?
From within the pocket.
Okay, see, yeah. I see, because he doesn't move. He can't. That's why, so Matt was talking about earlier about his athletic testing surprising everyone. I think it would have surprised anybody if you watched him on film. Like, there are one or two plays where you're like, oh, that's a nice scramble. But he just does it so infrequently and so unwillingly that you're just like, there's no way that this is a part of his game. And I think I saw after, you know, he did the testing, some people, you know, were like, oh, well, he's a great athlete. Now he can go create. It's like, well, I don't think you teach a guy to go scramble or to go create or to go make plays or to go run and take hits. It's more likely you have the Josh Allens and the Drake Mays who are psychopaths and you have to like walk them off the cliff a little bit. Mm-hmm. I just don't think you're going to get Michael Penix to go out and create. And that's kind of like the general crux of why I've struggled with Penix as a prospect, because he's going to be a stationary pocket passer who, like Matt said, takes a long time to throw, has a really weird release in terms of it being like a low trajectory. I think that's why he struggles to get touch on a lot of his throws on the ball. It's just a funky trajectory. It's just not a good build, I think, for the modern NFL. I think if you're going to be built that way, you have to be literally like 2015 Carson Palmer. And I'm going to guess that neither he nor any other prospect in this class is going to be as good as 2015 Carson Palmer.
It's like they also just signed Kirk Cousins.
Right. That's the we didn't. The fact that we don't even lead with that is how insane that this pick is that we don't even lead with the fact they just paid Kirk Cousins an ungodly amount of money.
Hey, compared to Daniel Jones, they're like totally sane. But like,
the funny thing too is, if you're going to do the sign Kirk and develop thing, whatever. But wouldn't JJ have made so much more sense? Like, whatever you think about him as a prospect, it's like, okay, but he's a lot younger and he fits in this mold of quarterback that I think that they want for this offense. Michael Penix is 24. Let's assume he sits for 2 years. He's going to be 26 by the time he's starting his first season. That seems crazy, no?
Okay, here's a question. Who retires first, Kirk or
Penix? Okay. But so Penix is old. And despite that, I like him better than McCarthy as a prospect. But that's neither here nor there, really. But injuries are an interesting thing here, because part of the argument against Penix is his injury history. And part of the argument for Penix is most quarterbacks don't make it through a full season. Kirk Cousins is coming off a season-ending injury himself, maybe having two competent quarterbacks that can play while we're in win-now mode, because let's face it, we're all worried about getting fired. Maybe that is somewhat rational, and I don't know if there are huge holes on that roster like today. So a little bit of like devil's advocate. It's hard to find quarterbacks. If you do the thing where you try to make sure you got one. And then if you end up with a surplus of quarterbacks, you think you're lucky stars. It's fascinating.
I want to go back to something you said. You said we're all worried about getting fired. What is that supposed to be?
Oh, I mean that the Atlanta regime has been through one head coach already, and that they are into the cycle of, if this doesn't get fixed up soon, that's when jobs are on the line.
So it wasn't a pointed remark in any way. Okay, I got it. Did you guys see the video of Terry Fontenot talking to Arthur Blank, looking like he had some explaining to do?
You say, yeah, sorry about that Desmond Ridder thing.
Let's do it again, but worse. I don't know.
Yeah, I just...
Terry's a good dude. Maybe it'll work out. Maybe we'll all be surprised, right? We all know a lot less than we think we do. That's always one of the key lessons of the draft, right?
The one nice thing I'll say, listen, if you're going to try to make Michael Penix work, you should probably try to have a receiver who does a lot of what Romo Odunze did at Washington. Drake London fits that box pretty seamlessly, so that's something.
Opium. Speaking of Romo Odunze, things fell pretty perfectly for the Bears. I think that's the... There was some foreshadowing pre-draft that this 1-2 punch would happen in the first 9 picks. And now the Bears are doing cute little bromance videos, and it's annoying.
Annoying? No, see, I'm all in on this this pairing.
It's great from a football standpoint, but not if you're a Lions fan.
It's fit. Yeah, that's true. See, I'm not a Lions fan, so I'm okay. I'm a football fan, and I think this is going to be fantastic. And I kind of tweeted this. I think this is the perfect pairing, not just because I think they're both fantastic players, but Caleb. So I think Caleb is better in structure than people give him credit for. But in general, he is a little bit more of your chaotic quarterback. He's going to try to scramble. He's going to go try to do stuff. He's going to just play outside of his mind a little bit. Romo Odunze is the complete opposite of that as a receiver. He is the most like set it and forget it X receiver, super clean route runner, incredibly strong hands, really good at the catch point. He's not going to like rip off 60-yard touchdowns, I think, as a yak guy, but like he'll consistently turn 5 into 15, that sort of deal. So pairing a quarterback like Caleb, where he's kind of chaotic and you need to get him to be a little bit more sound, a little bit more just do things normal, and pairing him with a receiver who is like unbelievably good at just being the normal, like, be at your spot, catch the ball type of receiver, I think it's such a good, like, this is how you develop a quarterback type of pairing.
I don't like it.
I mean, yeah, it worked out well for them. They have it all. Personally, I was more of I thought Odunze was the third best receiver in this year's draft. Not a criticism of him, but I thought he was the highest player on our board at this point in the draft, and it would have been hard for me to resist if I was the Bears also. They have legit weapons around their quarterback now, and filling out a little bit of the basketball team that you want in your wide receiver group, right? With the DJ Moore being more kind of like the wing type player, and then having Odunze to be kind of like your big, you sort of start to see the vision of how this can be a headache for the rest of Bryce's NFC North.
Yeah, it's pretty annoying that overnight, maybe the most historically inept passing franchise in the NFL suddenly appears to have a really exciting and fun passing offense. So,
yeah, Keenan Allen's a nice one to throw, huh?
pretty good start.
Yeah, and I said he was over the hill last year, but I'm not going to completely take it on the chin for that because he looked hobbled.
I mean, he's over the hill insofar as he's not like your true number one carry the offense.
Oh, yeah,
but if you just need him to get 85 targets as your number three, shoot, that's perfect.
And then you get a lot of interchangeability with these guys too.
Yep.
Because like, I think you look at Rome, who can be like an X or a Z, and then you look at it like a DJ Moore, who can basically play anywhere depending on what you're trying to do. And then you look at where you're at right now with this time in his career, with Keenan Allen being able to like be kind of like a true slot, or like what he's been as a Z. Like there's a lot of fun stuff that you can do that can really mess with matchups defensively.
I don't like it. But what I do like is the Vikings jumping themselves to take J.J. McCarthy.
One pick, trades, love it.
Oh, it's so good. I'm not a J.J. McCarthy fan. Even if they hadn't traded up to get him, I wouldn't have liked him in the first round. This is just beautiful.
I'm like fine on J.J. McCarthy. Like, I think people were crazy pumping him up as this like you know, maybe he should go over May or maybe he should go top 10. That too much was rich to me. But he, again, was to me in the Jaden Daniels tier, kind of where it's like, you take this at the back end of the first round, top 50 in that range. This can be a quarterback who you win games with, but maybe isn't winning you games. I think when you have a team as stacked as Minnesota is elsewhere on the offense, it's perfectly fine. Like, I think the, you know, value you get out of rookie quarterbacks to me is a little bit overrated unless they are truly a star to begin with. And I don't think JJ McCarthy will be. But, like, I do think that they'll be pretty competitive in this window with him. And, like, whatever you think about him, this is very obviously the best spot for him to be whatever his best version of him can be.
I'm kind of with both of you guys. Like, I don't like JJ McCarthy, the prospect. But, like, what are we saying? Like, could I get him in the middle of the second round? Okay, like, I could, like, especially if I'm the Vikings and I have that kind of an infrastructure, I'm interested. At the same time, now that he's on the Vikings, it's like, okay, that JJ gets paired with another JJ who can help this JJ be probably a better JJ than he would have been without him. And again, the whole infrastructure of the Vikings, all of a sudden, now I'm thinking that maybe he'll do pretty well, especially compared, like,
you're being like, JJ,
do I like JJ McCarthy against Drake May? No, but JJ McCarthy within the Minnesota infrastructure versus Drake May within the New England infrastructure, I think that's a whole different formula.
I think they can Tua him, where he is not an actually good quarterback, but they can get very good quarterback production out of him. Which
JJ Garoppolo.
Yeah, which is going to spawn just horrific online discussions for the next 4 years. As it always seems to be, there's always one of those guys. But, like, I think that that's the plan. And, like, again, I don't know if I would have wanted to do that, but you can be a competitive team doing that, which, whatever. If that keeps you your job, good for you.
I'm out on this. Like, especially in light of what they gave up to get him.
That's, like, the bigger problem.
We're talking about everybody has made the, whether you like JJ McCarthy or not, everybody has made the concession that he wasn't asked to do a ton at Michigan. And I also think even in that limited sample, you also don't have a ton of, like, NFL type reps. There's still a lot of wide open throws being made. You really have to search yourself into this guy.
Vikings. So, but the Vikings, we think of them as a smart franchise, right? Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, we think, is the okay. They made two trade ups tonight, plus the trade up before tonight. Does that tell us that they think they have a different understanding of trade up versus trade down value than the sort of orthodoxy in analytics? Or
I'm gonna be real frank with you. So, you know how in a bunch of stoner movies, there's always the potheads that, like, sell a gram of weed for $40 to some naive nerd?
Oh yeah, I know.
I think that's what's happening.
You think that's crazy?
Yeah.
Another aspect of this too, I think they're obviously with all these trades, like, leveraging their future for what seems to be competing right now in this little 4-year rookie quarterback window. Part of what they're doing there is saying offense is so much more valuable than defense that we're going to just leverage everything, go get this quarterback. And I know they also went up and traded for Dallas Turner later in the round, and we'll talk about that. But, like, they don't have the picks or capital now to address a defense that has, like, two good players. They're just thinking that the offense is going to be incredible. That just seems like a scary build to me. Seems very glass cannon.
What I think is, I think they miscalculated the quarterback, how it was going to go. Who saw 12 in the first 12 picks, 6 quarterbacks? I mean, that's crazy. This isn't the 1983 quarterback class. And even that class only had, like, 3 out of the 6 that ended up being that, and that was over 30 picks.
So, I don't think people saw the run on quarterbacks, but I also don't think you needed to see that run to know that you're probably going to get 3 quarterbacks off the board in the first 3 picks, and then there's a draw.
I think they might have made a miscalculation. I think they might have felt comfortable.
Definitely a miscalculation. It's just not the type of miscalculation you're talking. I think that, like, the Penix going and Bo Nix, who we'll talk about in a little bit, I think that's immaterial. I think
maybe when they moved to 23, they thought they were getting Penix there. You know what I mean? Like,
but like, oh God.
Oh, okay. That's bad. That's not good.
That's a different kind of bad, but I do see what you're saying. I do see what you're saying.
See, my
it might have been like an overthinking strategic kind of error, as opposed to like, I don't think they value things in terms of they wanted to trade up three times and end up with JJ McCarthy. Like, that seems hard to believe to me.
I think if there's a miscalculation somewhere along the line, it's that, and this is my read on it. I could be wrong, but I think you trade up to 23 to try and have the ammo to move up and get Drake May or Jaden Daniels, because you know you're not going to get Williams. But I think if you're doing that, that's what you're trying to do. I don't think that McCarthy is next to, like, oh, they were blindsided by this run on quarterbacks and we're going to take a guy. I think they didn't understand that they weren't in like punching range to get one of the top guys in the draft. I think that's the miscalculation. I don't think anything's like surprise about tonight's surprise run on quarterbacks affects their plans. At least I would hope not. I would hope you're not like panic picking a guy, but.
All right, let's keep rocking. Are we at Bo yet? I got Bo.
No.
Close. We got one more.
No, we got Olufoshanu, Penn State tackle to the Jets. I like it because yeah. I don't think you can trust either of the guys they had on the roster going into the night to play a full season. I also just like the player. I think he's a lot further ahead from a mental standpoint than people give him credit for, especially because he's so young. I think he like picks up twists and stunts and blitzes pretty well. I think he sees that stuff pretty quickly. Plays a little bit more forward than I would like, but strong, athletic. The hand usage is really good. It's not on Latham's level, but that I would say is certainly a strength for him going forward. So I like it. It's not funny, but I like it.
It's not funny, but yeah, to the point that Matt made, like, these tackles are not going to play 17 games, either of them, and he's a good long-term option because Smith is not going to be a long-term option with his health. So perfectly fine pick to me.
Love it. Back to the rational behavior portion. I would have been attracted to drafting Bowers if I was there, but I think they showed good discipline.
Yep. Bo Nix, 12th overall of the Broncos. This is abysmal.
It's bad.
The nerds have won. See, okay, here's what's going to happen.
Wait, the nerds? This is the nerds winning?
Yes, this is the nerds winning because the
whole... I'm not on the internet enough to know that Bo Nix would be a nerd pick. Like, what happened?
Oh, well, good for you, Brex Moore.
It's just because he plays quarterback. Like, it's not about his analytical profile or anything.
Yeah.
It's literally just the idea that you take quarterbacks until you get one, which is crazy.
The nerds won.
Here's how this narrative arc is going to play out. Teams are starting to get desperate for quarterbacks, and they are, per, we'll say, conventional analytical wisdom, is that you draft, you invest at quarterback until you hit. And so we see six quarterbacks in the first 12 picks. Teams are investing at quarterback until they hit. And what's going to happen is that a bunch of these idiots are going to flame out. And eventually, they will pick a good quarterback. And then we'll get the boom, see, told you so. You just needed to invest in quarterback until they hit, even though you could have just taken a good quarterback eventually.
You could have just not taken the bad quarterback. I don't know. And that's a little bit too strong for Nix. Like, at pick 50, I would have been fine with Bo Nix. But, like, at 12...
I can see him being like a low end starter in the right.
Yeah, what I said about Bo Nix is I think he comes out of the box as Gardner Minshew, and if things go well, he can be like what Andy Dalton was for the Bengals. That's not sexy. It's a fine starter, but you don't take that at 12. Like, it's just the Bengals didn't even take Andy Dalton at 12. They took him in the second round. Like, you know, like, it's just crazy to me.
Yeah,
it's funny you said Dalton. I was saying I think his. Listen, I love Sean Payton, and I think that if there's anywhere a quarterback can succeed, it's with Sean Payton because of his understanding of the position and the fact that he's going to invest whatever the hell he needs to in order to make it work. And look at Russell Wilson last year. Russell Wilson sucked. He maximized Russell Wilson, right? Like, Russell Wilson was, like, as good as Russell Wilson could be at this point.
Listen, even if I thought they maximized Russell Wilson, Batman couldn't get that out. I'm not going to give Russell Wilson credit for anything at this point.
I'm not asking you to, but I'm just saying, like, this might be the best, just like I said before with McCarthy, it's a good scenario for him. This one too, like, I'm not a Bo Nix believer, but this is potentially a good scenario for him.
assuming that like it just hasn't been too much Kool-Aid that's been consumed. It was funny because Derek was saying, like, my comparison was like, why do you want to draft at number 12 somebody that can be at their best, like a little bit better than Daniel Jones? Like, it just feels crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. This, I don't know. I don't think the arm strength is great. I like the athletic ability.
Next time somebody asks you though, like, why are people so bad at projecting quarterbacks? Just be like, hey, listen, I didn't tell you to draft J.J. McCarthy and Bo Nix in the first round, in the first 12 picks. like, because that's why. It's because, like, we're so desperate for them.
But talking about a guy that leaves a lot of meat on the bone over the middle, down the field, does take pretty good care of the ball, gets it out in a somewhat reasonable. So my gripe with him is that I think his best work comes in the short to intermediate, but I don't think he processes quickly enough to be like a quick game savant. Like, he's not going to be empty spread and shred type quarterback. And I don't think he sees the game fast enough to be a quote unquote West Coast guy.
Well, because like even when he was good short to intermediate at Oregon, it wasn't like he's going one to two to three boom balls out. It was a lot of just like pre-snap stuff, which is fine, and that can be a nice part of your offense, but you got to have more than that. And I think he does in terms of like the athletic ability. He can make a couple of plays, but I don't know. I'm kind of with you in the sense like you would think for a 5-year starter, he would have a little bit more like the high level processing stuff, which is what I said about Kenny Pickett, where it was like, dude, he's played a lot of football and he is not.
Jaden Daniels too.
Yeah. Jaden Daniels too. So yeah, that's kind of my concern.
Like, we're making the right decision most of the time. It's just not happening in a timely manner. The other thing is I talk about him leaving meat on the bone. We chart wide open and contested throws. He had the lowest percentage of contested throws in the FBS last year by a considerable margin. It was almost half what the FBS average was.
Gee.
Not quite half, but I mean, things were pretty easy there. And if you find a way to live that way in the NFL, all the power in the world to you. But things are typically not that easy.
Well, the biggest comps I think of for him are almost like a little bit funny, but like are Tim Tebow and Taysom Hill. Like, how did that go?
Okay.
Tim Tebow could not throw a football, so I'll give him a little bit more than that. I actually do think the Daniel Jones comp was not that bad, though. Like, that's kind of in the range of outcomes as well.
Tim Tebow was deeply unserious. I wasn't even watching football like that during the Tim Tebow days, but you don't have to. I mean, you don't have to do much more than watch a couple highlights of Tebow. And
I hope you didn't see Bo Nix at Auburn.
Oh, I did. He was horrible. But if you stay in college for 8-9 years,
you become unhorrible.
Yeah,
you think Coach Fagan got obsessed with like the Taysom Hill type, and that's like something to do with this?
Yes, actually,
I get it.
We all get older. All right, so let's move on. Brock Bowers to the Raiders. I like the player. I've fallen off a little bit on how much I like him compared to like the start of the college season, for example, or even the end of the college season.
Boo.
I still like him. I don't know what the plan is for him in Las Vegas.
Oh, horrible landing spot. It's one of the most upsetting landing spots that Brock Bowers could have found.
We can fanfic like the 12 personnel renaissance Gronk Hernandez rest in peace thing, but I
don't know what you're doing there.
So okay, I'm glad you brought that team up, though, because that's the thing. If you're going to do this whole 12 personnel thing, which for the past 10 years, we've had multiple teams try to be like, oh, they're going to be the 12 personnel team, and nobody ever does it. Body type-wise, they do have the guys. Like Michael Mayer, I thought was a really good prospect last year. Brock Bowers, I think, is a really good prospect this year. In theory, they have the guys to do it. But one, I just don't know if I trust. Like, we just don't know enough about this coaching staff, in my opinion, to know that I trust them to make this, like, unconventional thing work in the NFL. Like, it's just, and then two, your quarterback is Gardner Minshew and your offensive line's not that good. Like, it's a bizarre pick to me. Like, this to me should have been, I mean, like Tyleese Fuaga went in the next pick. Like, it should have been something like that. Amarius Mims went a few picks later. It should have been something like I just don't pick a corner or something. Like, it just doesn't make sense that they took Bowers, even though I love him.
Yeah, it's a little bit of like buying a Lamborghini when you need a truck. or something like that. Like like you said, maybe they can make it work. You got your true Y and you got your true H or F, however you align them type player, but like TBD on if this can become something that materializes into a plan.
Fuaga. I am lower on Fuaga than most people. I like the first step. I like the anchor. I'm not as finishing pilled as some people are. Like, I know that he has a lot of highlight reel stuff where he's dumpstering somebody, and that's cool and all. But at the end of the day, how many times do you see that in an NFL game? And I don't like the redirect ability. And to be fair, you know, inside counters, like, you're not going to get guys spinning inside on you every snap. So we're talking about a smaller handful of plays. But I think he is susceptible to that stuff. I don't know. You guys might feel differently. There's a lot of really good tackles this year too. That's probably part of it. There's flavors in the draft. I just like some guys more than him, but I don't hate the pick. If I had the grade, I'd get like a C plus or something, B minus.
Yeah, I've only got a couple of quick things to say. One, at least he maybe can also play guard. So like the Saints kind of need offensive line everywhere. So I think that could make a little bit of sense for them. I didn't watch him all that much, but what I will say is his body type is kind of weird to me. He's a very like skinny lower half player. That gives me a little bit of concerns because I just don't think that there's that many like truly, truly super talented, like high end offensive tackles that are built that way. They're either thicker in the lower half or just more well built overall. So his body type is a little bit odd to me, but it might work out.
Yeah, usually, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a guy like that. Early in his career, Taylor Decker was kind of like that.
Yeah, that's.
But he's also a taller guy.
Yeah, there's not a lot of them. Yeah,
not a lot of them. But yeah, I don't hate it. But
it's fine.
I would have liked some guys that came after him a little bit more. I probably would have liked Fatale more, agnostic of the injuries, because I realized there's some stuff there. There was like some buzz about him like falling off teams' boards or falling down teams' boards because of some medical concerns. So I get that. I probably like Mims more, but people have different preferences. And now we finally get to the first defensive player, Liatu Latu out of UCLA to the Indianapolis Colts. This is not a great edge class. The production from him is really nice. He was like first in our true pressure percent metric. I think there's some stuff like that. I don't know. I kind of see him as like a more like low end defensive end one than a huge difference maker, but you don't have those guys in this edge class. Maybe I'll be wrong about that. I also would have preferred probably Dallas Turner, but he's got issues as well. Okay. I want to take issues, connotates something a little different. There are some cons to this game too.
The only thing that surprised me about this pick is usually Ballard takes like the super just monster crazy athletes. Liatu Latu did not test all that well. Like, it wasn't terrible, but he just didn't test like a Ballard pick. So I think when he came off the board there, it really surprised me.
He's fine. Like, I think he's more of like a technical guy. Like, the pass rush plan is pretty good from him, but that's also why I don't see him as like a high end. Like, I don't see the upside there as much. I think he's closer to you never want to call guys like finished products, but I think there's less room for growth there than a guy like Chop Robinson, for example.
Yeah, I like him as a player a little bit better than Chop, and I hear what you're saying. We'll get there, but I like him as a player. I'm happy that, again, the injury concern with him wasn't enough to sort of like derail it. But the thing that's really interesting to me about this is that the first defensive player lasted till number 15 in this draft. I think this is like a bigger thing about the NFL and how teams are valuing offense versus defense. And it happened to coincide with where the talent sort of lay this year. But I mean, if you look at our big board, we had six players with grades of a 6.9 or higher. They were all on offense and they all went before this. We had five more players on offense in the 6-8 grade range and four players on defense in the 6-8 grade range. All four on offense went before any of them on defense went. So I think there is a bit of a growing movement towards the analytical belief that offense is a little bit more controllable year over year compared to defense. The resources seem to be going that way. at least if you look at just this year's draft.
You added that caveat because I was gonna gripe about.
I mean, for a few years though, Micah Parsons was the first player off the board in his draft, right? Like there's
Okay. Micah Parsons had off the field stuff dropped him,
but none of the other defensive players went in the top 11 that year. Is what I'm saying. Like, there's
and that's fair.
Offensive players go earlier, and probably with good reason. I think it's rational.
It's going to be quarterbacks, tackles, and receivers, unless you are one of like the Miles Garrett, yeah, Jalen Ramsey, like Pat's, like that caliber of defensive prospect,
elite defensive lineman or corner.
Right. Exactly.
Yep. Sad. I know Betts is talking about it.
Cool. It's kind of cool that we're doing things rationally. I like it.
So there was a little run on defenders in this window. Byron Murphy from Texas, the Seahawks. That defensive line group looks pretty good for them. I think I'm not as high on Murphy as some people, I would say. He's a little smaller than I would like. Like, I get that he's explosive. I get that he's a gap shooter. The arm length and size.
I'll tell you about the time that I was too low on Aaron Donald.
I'm always bet against people being here, but I like it. Like, you get a bit of pass rush juice. I think he's probably strictly like an even front guy. I don't know how much McDonald is going to want to do odd front stuff when he's there, but there are some limitations. But I think mid first round is fine.
Even if I think they go odd, you play him in a shade. Like, you can't play him head up on anybody. He's not going to be two gapping anybody.
And truthfully, this defense does so much like post snap movement with a lot of their gaps, like because there's how much they blitz and how much they send guys from different places. So like I think it's going to be perfectly fine. And the other thing I want to add on it too is I think because they already had Leonard Williams, they already have Draymond Jones, and now they're adding in Byron Murphy. One, they don't need him to immediately be like, oh my God, you're carrying our defensive line. The fact that they kind of have like this rotation now, I think is going to be pretty nice for them. Be a pretty nice piece.
They have some other areas they could have stood to address, but I don't hate, philosophically speaking, trying
need based drafter Bryce Rosler, need based drafter.
Yeah, I don't hate. Solid pick. It's hard to in all fairness, like if it sounds like I'm a little lukewarm on it, it's hard generally to get excited about defensive tackles. So that's
we have a difference of opinion, my friend. I get very excited about defensive tackles. Show me some first step explosion. I saw ankle flexion.
Yeah, we've got a football virtue signal
first here. Oh yeah, I love this stuff.
So
seriously, though, like that's the best way to win on defense, right? Three techniques, one of the best ways to win on defense.
You blow it up in the middle. There's going to be a lot of problems elsewhere. So I kind of get it.
Dictate that you can't double team him. Just cause a problem against one of your worst athletes. I like it.
I do think it's an underrated position, but I don't think it's the best way, but that's a rabbit hole that we're potentially getting down. Dallas Turner, the Vikings. I liked him the most out of this edge class. I think pretty athletic, fairly strong. I don't see him as like, I'll say this. I like the fit for what they do in Minnesota on defense. Like, he at Alabama was asked to fill a number of roles. It wasn't like he was a true edge player every down. He dropped into coverage a little bit. He's okay against the run, but I guess I just see him as more of like a jack of all trades type guy than like a extremely disruptive pass rusher. And that's fine. You need those kind of players on your
team. Yeah, my read on him, and I didn't like study him because I mostly studied offensive players, but I've seen him enough in passing. You watch college football, you see Alabama. He feels to me more like a Bruce Irvin type, which is to your point, like a jack of all trades, where it's like, okay, he's a pretty solid speed rusher, but he's not going to be a 12 sack guy. He's a pretty solid run defender, but he's not going to be a Khalil Mack. And then to your point about the Flores defense, like you can probably drop him off into coverage a little bit. Like, he is a really good athlete in space and he can do a little bit of that stuff. So I think he's a nice prospect who, like you said, kind of landed in a really, really good spot to probably get the most out of him.
Yeah, I love the fit. Ideally, when you take an edge, you want a transcendental pass rusher, and I don't think he's that, but I think he does a lot of nice things for a defense. You know, he's got the athletic tools, so maybe there's some upside there.
Yeah, I think you guys got him right. He's freaky in a lot of ways, athletically. He's not somebody that, you know, we're all going to need to pound the table for.
So a pick I was excited about, or at least one I thought that was pretty good, was Amarius Mims to the Bengals. Our dear friend Charles McDonald, hopefully he's still with us, but he's a big fan of this guy. I think he's a solid athlete, just like point blank, not given his size or anything. Like, I think I would give him like a 5 athleticism, which on our scale is like sufficient. Like, you can win in the NFL like that. It's not a strength, but when you couple it with how big he is, how long he is, how strong his hands and his anchor are, it's really easy to see a path forward for him as a pretty darn good tackle in the NFL.
God just didn't make a lot of Amarius Mims.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's just not a lot of dudes who are built like this. And like you said, like, usually if you're going to have a guy who is as big as this, athletically, they're going to be closer to like Trent Brown, which is funny that the Bengals drafted him because they also have Trent Brown, but where he's like a little bit slower footed, like kind of doesn't redirect all that well, all that stuff. With Mims, I don't think, like you said, he's not like special in terms of the way that he moves, but for his size, it's not at all going to be a problem. He's going to be able to do stuff. I think this is a home run pick. Like, the Bengals needed to kind of, they're in a weird spot roster wise. So I think they needed to eat their vegetables a little bit. And this is very much them doing that.
Yeah. Solid pick. I like a lot of the tackles this year. I went back to some of the statistics that we collected in terms of these guys. He had a little bit more in terms of, a little bit fewer good blocks and a little bit fewer bad blocks than average across kind of the board there. So he kind of, amongst the prospects in this year's class, he was kind of in the middle in terms of the ratio there. Interesting to look at in terms of when he was on the field, what he was able to do.
So to make sure I understand you correctly, a little bit more hot and cold than anything?
Less hot and cold, actually. Less hot and cold. Yeah. A little bit less goods and a little bit less bads.
Oh, interesting.
For the Bengals, that's,
I don't know. I feel like I should say fewer because Alex has been.
I'm getting old, man, and it's getting late. So I need everybody to bear with. So Jared Verse to the Rams, I'll let other people rave about him if they want. He's just not the type of, he doesn't fit like the type of pass rusher I like, I would say. Not very good bend, more of like a linear speed to power kind of guy. And again, this is another case of those players can be useful to have on your football team, but not transformative in any way, I don't think. And I don't think the upside is as high there, but I can see him being like an 8-ish sacks a year guy. I can see him being like a Sam Hubbard.
Okay, see, I was a little bit better than that, but I was going to say like Jonathan Greenard kind of feels like a pretty good case scenario for him, where it's like, if he's your best pass rusher, you're probably okay, but you definitely want something better, and he's better off if he's your number two. Like that style of, and then again, like you said, he's not super bendy, not really winning around the edge. He's a little bit more of a pocket pusher, a little bit more of a tough guy, which again is valuable. You're going to get something out of that. It's a skill set that's going to play, but the high end potential seems not as exciting. But I will say, the Rams needed anybody off the edge, dude. Like, even just getting a guy in that mold is perfectly acceptable, I think, for them.
Yeah, especially with Aaron Dunn.
Yeah.
I get it. Matt, do you love him?
No, I don't love him. Don't hate him. Thank you, guys. So I don't have anything interesting to say.
What else is new? Okay. I don't think Fatanu for the Steelers.
Go on.
Troy Fatanu for the Steelers with the asterisk of the injury concerns, I think is a really good pick. I'm of the opinion that he could probably play all 5 spots if you wanted him to. Very controlled, smooth player. Might get a bit overwhelmed by high-end power at the NFL would be my main concern. I'm not talking like every NFL edge rusher is going to be able to bull rush him, but I think he might struggle with some of the better bull rushers in the league or the speed-to-power guys in the league. But overall, just like on the field, like the player, really like the flexibility. And the Steelers needed to do something about their offensive line.
I think Fatanu was my favorite pick for either the Saints or the Steelers, where it's just like, get him in camp and figure it out. Like, if he's a tackle, cool. If he's a guard, cool. If you need to kick him into center, cool. Like, it doesn't matter. To me, I think his stuff at tackle, when I was like watching Michael Penix, Roma Dunze, you know, I know some people immediately want to kick him into guard, and that's fine. I'm sure he will be a really good guard if that's the case. I think he can play left tackle, though. Like, I think his footwork is really good. I think he's clean overall. He's a pretty good athlete overall. Like you said, he sometimes against the strongest players, he's not the best, but I don't think it's like Cedric Abueyi, where he just every time someone puts hands in his chest, he's completely done. I don't think it's anything like that. So I would start him at left tackle, see what happens. If you have to kick him inside, perfectly fine. And I say that especially for the Steelers because they have Dan Moore starting left tackle right now. I don't think that is a good day one place to be with Dan Moore starting left tackle. So I would definitely start Fatanu at tackle and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm with it. I don't feel strongly. I like the idea of get him in, get on the field, figure out what the best spot is for him. I'm not even that concerned about like which the best spot is for him. I'm pretty sure he can be one of the best five dudes that's on a Super Bowl contending offensive line. So I'm with it.
Did you say something contentious, please?
Not at this point in the first round, no.
So we're not cutting to Matt at any point the rest of the way. Miami Dolphins, Chop Robinson. Okay, so full confession. I watched this player for the first time today. I did some last minute, but I like it. This is the type of player I get excited about. Like, extremely explosive first step, good bend, good change of direction. I don't think
I always like players when I watch their highlights the first time.
I wasn't watching. Okay. I don't think he has put it all together yet from like a pass rush plan, but I will bet on players like this in the first round all day, every day, especially towards the end of the first round. And I will say this, he had among players with at least 20 pressures last season, he was far and away the quickest snap to pressure time of anybody. Like,
all right. So if you're going to ask me to be contentious, and then when the Dolphins come up, you're going to like say things that are good points that I have a lot of trouble like arguing with, then what do you want me to do here?
I don't know. Be a carnival barker. Call me an idiot.
But I think, I don't know. I actually think that what you see makes sense. Listen, I watched him earlier in the year. I didn't watch him today while I was like scrambling to do a podcast, but I honestly didn't love the film. And I had kind of moved on. To your point, the repertoire wasn't good. And I'm like, this guy's name is Chop Robinson. How hasn't he figured out how to do a good chop as he's, you know, tearing down the offensive tackle's arms? But that's a whole different thing. But Jeremy Percy, our very good friend, excellent offensive line evaluator. He and defensive line evaluator is more relevantly. He wrote him up and he kept coming back to the first step. And so I did go back and I reviewed it. And when I watched a little bit more film over the course of the year, I think he's right. He has a special skill with that first step. And for all of the inconsistencies and the lack of development of a pass rush game, I think Jeremy was spot on in his report. And I think that our advanced statistics, to your point, start to illuminate that. When you start to really look into his advanced stats, It paints a picture of somebody who produced, despite the fact that I don't think he's like fully developed his game. So Jeremy actually called out in his report that he's ideally a sub down player in the first year with the potential to develop into a high level starter down the road. And I think he's going to come into a situation there in Miami where that's exactly, he can be a rotational piece to start and then theoretically grow into that role when they decide they don't want to pay bad Bradley Chubb anymore. So I like the vision there now, and it's been a ride for me in terms of my opinions of this player. And at the end of the day, you got to have the good fit, and you got to have the good vision for what they're going to be. And I think that might exist here.
Yeah, I'll also note that he was 19th in pressure rate plus minus. So, not
19th.
Yeah,
I think you got that backwards again.
No,
is so as an idea, is he like Yannick, and then you hope that he becomes something more?
I'm trying to think of who the top is.
I don't know. I Yannick's...
Can he set the edge? That's my question.
Not really. Not really at this point.
Then I'm out.
No, he's like a sub. He's a sub down player. But when you see the athleticism and when you see the get off, I think you want a piece of that. And There's no reason to think that he can't become that, right? 6'3", 254. There's no reason why he can't be an edge setter. It's just, it's not refined right now. It's sufficient at best.
I'll throw this in to sweeten the pot.
Fifth in the class in pressure percentage plus minus.
What?
10.2%. Fifth in the class.
Among draft eligible players or across all of FBS?
Oh, draft eligible.
Yeah. I'm sure he's higher in draft, though. I'm just talking about all of FBS.
I thought you were saying in this year's draft. No, he's fifth in this year's draft.
No.
He's good across the board in most statistics. Yeah. Number one in quick pressure percentage. So you're
by a considerable amount.
Also, he's adjusted tackle depth plus, but that doesn't reflect the tackles that he doesn't make.
Well, I'm not necessarily drafting designated pass rushers to make tackles at a certain area of the field.
I mean, he's a first-round player. He's not a long-term DPR. He's a defensive end.
Yeah, I just want go kill quarterback, please and thank you. I'm talking a bit about out of both sides of my mouth with this conversation compared to like the Dallas Turner discussion, but I don't care. Who's going to hold me accountable? Quinny Mitchell to the Eagles. I like this quite a bit. This was I did not just watch him today, but he came up multiple times. This is somebody our friend Nate Tice has been banging the drum on since like the start of the college season, basically. And I finally got around to watching him. Really like the physical profile, like the ball skills quite a bit too. I wish he had more reps in press, but I think the athletic profile, everything about it suggests that he can do that stuff just fine. So I like this kick quite a bit for the Eagles. He was somebody that I was hoping would fall to the Lions, but as the draft process played out, it became clear and clear that was probably not realistic, but Eagles got a good one. And they also needed it. They needed it real bad.
That's the thing. And like above needing it, the Eagles just tend to draft like a year out anyway. Yes. They've done this a handful of times on the defensive line. They've done it on the offensive line. And at corner, they have James Redbrand, Darius Slade. They can still be good. Like they're still good players if they're starting, but they're both old. They're probably going to miss games and they're not going to be there long term. So
they declined a little bit last year too.
Right. You can already start to see like this. And that's the other thing with corner too. Like I feel like a lot of times, like once you hit the wall, you're just completely cooked.
Yep.
And there's a chance that happens to one of those guys this year. So I think it's a pretty smart move for them to get out in front of it. If they hit the wall this year, they have Mitchell, they can go play him. If not, then fine. They can develop Mitchell for a year and they'll be good later.
Yeah. And to clarify, Derek, you think he can start this year? Need to be right.
Yeah, I think so. I think that would be totally fine. It's just they're kind of in a luxury spot where they don't need to.
Brian Thomas, Jaguars, LSU wide receiver. Brian Thomas, when I did my, so I watched Jaden Daniels before I watched the receivers individually. Brian Thomas got a bit on my bad side with some concentration drops. And my first run through of Daniels, I was cursing him. But when I watched just him and focused on him specifically, I liked him a lot more than I thought I would. I'm not sure I would take him in the first. I don't know. It's close.
I think at this spot in the draft, it's fine.
It's not horrible by any means. I like the movement skills. The route running is not bad at all. I'm just always a little apprehensive of guys that don't have the best hands, but he can catch the ball. He's not terrible, but the concentration drops can be a bit of a problem. Some of the contested stuff, I think, can be a little bit of a problem. Not that that's necessarily the most stable area of production anyways, but maybe.
I think his best moments with the ball in the air are really, really good, but he does kind of have some consistency issues. With a player who's so young, I'm a little bit more willing to be like, maybe he can figure it out, especially with, I think, the route running. You saw him get better the more he played over his couple of years there. The other thing, like the main thing I have with Brian Thomas, he reminds me a lot of Martavis Bryant. And obviously Martavis Bryant had a short career, kind of flamed out. That didn't have anything to do with Martavis Bryant, the player. That was like obviously off-field stuff. I think Martavis Bryant, the player, is like a 1,000-yard receiver who is a pretty good deep threat, maybe a little bit frustrating at times, but overall a good player to have. Granted, I would have liked the Bengals or the Jaguars to have a more consistent receiver for Trevor, because I think we've seen him deal with inconsistent receivers for a very long time. But I think Brian Thomas can be a pretty good player, and I like the long-term outlook on him. So again, maybe not the sexiest pick. I will say it feels a little bit better because they traded down and got a pretty good package for the pick. So
yeah, that's true. That's where
I think all of what they did tonight is totally fine.
Matt, are you still with us?
Yeah, it's about where I'm going. I don't have much interesting to say about that. Like, good pick, good player, fine.
Matt is deliberately sabotaging the podcast.
I'm not pod.
Jealousy.
Listen, we've been going for a while. I'm picking my spots now.
You're picking your spots. All right. So it's good to know what your level of commitment is. That is duly noted. And I will act accordingly when inviting you on for the future. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. All right.
You want me to belabor? You want me to like belabor points so that we're here until 2 a.m.?
Until 4 a.m. No, thank you.
Well, yeah. Let's be insincere about it. Lead me to an answer. Oh, whatever. Terry Arnold to the Lions. Lions trade up with the Cowboys for this. I like it. So in a vacuum with the player, I like the inside-outside flex ability. I think you can play him in the slot. I think you can play him outside. I think he does both well. I don't know how much value that is for the Lions because they want to be playing Ranch in the slot, but it is a strength of the player. I like the movement skills. I think I was surprised his 40 was a 4.51. I thought he would test much better than that. We'll see if that's copium for me or if it's just an instance of a player moving better in pads than he does in underwear. The Lions definitely needed a corner. I think that this was a good spot to take one. Like, even if they had stayed put, there were some decent options there. This is probably the second best guy after Mitchell, in my opinion. And the one thing I'll say about him is he has like sort of a, I guess I want to say like a Marshawn Lattimore quality to him, where, you know, for the vast majority of his reps, he looks really good, but he can be a little aggressive and his losses can look really bad. But overall, I like the player. The Lions, it's a premium position. It was a position in need for them. It'd be a lot nicer if they could maybe flex him inside and out so you're like maximizing the skill set you're drafting. But, you know, they're perfectly happy with Branch in the slot. So you got to think he's primarily an outside guy. But it is nice if for whatever reason Branch gets hurt and you need a guy you can flex inside. It does give you a bit of roster flexibility. So I like it. I don't hate it. I'm not angry about it, which is not customary for Lions draft selections. But it's a new dawn. It's a new day.
I like Terrion Arnold on the very simple basis of the best corners are the ones that fight you, and Terrion Arnold fights you. Like, that to me, it is that simple. I think if you look at almost all of the best cornerbacks in the league, they're ones that can put hands on you. Maybe they'll get a little grabby at times. Like, you know, you mentioned Marshawn Lattimore, he can get a little grabby at times, but I think in general the best cornerbacks are the ones that can fight you and make you work for every single inch on the field. I think Arnold absolutely does that, and you see really good instances of him like clicking, closing on stuff pretty fast, like almost to the point where he's running routes for receivers. So I like him a lot. Again, I thought maybe he'd test a little bit better than he did. Maybe that's why he fell, but I'm a fan. I like this pick.
Yeah, I like what he can do a little bit better in zone than being like a pure man cover guy. But I agree with that. You see over 20% of the time he was up in press. Nice pick here. Again, relatively chalky at this point. Sort of would have been unsurprised by any of the corners going here. Your podcast.
Yeah. I talked about the inside outside flexibility, but I think he can play press, he can play off man zone. I also really like the ball skills. I'm pleased. Much more pleased than I was this time last year, but they made the NFC championship.
I think he led all of our DBs in total points this year, right?
I think he was second.
Okay, he was up there.
He was second. I can't remember who was first, but he's like sixth in the class in man. On a percent basis, sixth in the class on zone, and I think he was second in aggregate.
Gosh.
All right, we're getting to the end. Jordan Morgan, Arizona offensive tackle for the Packers. They finally take an offensive lineman in the first three rounds. It feels like they've just been subsisting on like early day three guys forever, which is annoying. This was our number one tackle in pass blocking total points on a per snap basis, just out of Joe Alt. I am admittedly not as familiar with this player. Like, I have not studied this player. My understanding was that he was like considered like an early mid second round guy, and there were just too many tackles for me to sift through. So I'm hoping you guys can carry me.
Yeah, he's a size guy. He's big and strong.
But it's kind of funny. It's kind of not what I would expect from the Packers at all. The team that we know to be used to drafting like these athletic like freaks that maybe you'll take some time to develop, but they want him in for the long haul. This is a guy who like produced really well, but athletically, like 28-inch vertical jump, like is not what I usually expect in terms of like the workout kings that the Packers draft. So they must really like the player, and the player's got some good film out there. I always like a guy with 11-inch hands. Any offensive lineman that when you shake his hand, it makes you feel like a small child. I'm interested in that on my team. It definitely caught me off guard too. I thought a lot of offensive linemen would go on the first day. I didn't know if he would be one of them.
I will say, I think it's interesting that they drafted Morgan, like what you said about the type of offensive lineman they usually like. We got to remember a few years ago, they kind of shifted their front office and kind of went into a new regime. I think we're starting to see them being more willing to build the team in different ways. Like, they're a little bit smaller at corner and receiver than they typically were over the past, you know, 2-3 decades or whatever. They're maybe a little bit, like with the Jordan Morgan pick, maybe a little more willing to pick different types of offensive linemen. So I think more than anything, this just kind of indicates that the Packers are, especially now with the new quarterback, entering a different era of Packers football. And I think overall, just getting a little bit of protection for Jordan Love, who is very much a player who is willing to hang in pockets. So if you can even buy him a little bit extra time to make a throw down the field, that's money.
Yeah, offensive line felt a little inevitable for them. I don't know that like in terms of value and what makes sense for their team would really see any other direction in this draft class, but nothing wrong with that. I'm trying to avoid the word need because Matt will shame. Graham Barton for the Buccaneers. Do we like him as a tackle? I like him as a tackle, but I know some people feel that they want to put him at guard.
You like him as a tackle, list him as a center. I think he's a guard.
I think they listed him at center, and truthfully, just based on the team that is drafting him, I'm pretty confident he will be playing center. Like, they were starting, what was it, Robert Hainsey last year? That can't happen again, I don't think. So I think Graham Barton is gonna probably transition to center for them, and I think that's a good spot to be. Like, I think when you have a talented young player at center, obviously they have an all-pro left tackle in Tristan Wirfs. So I'm still not sure about some of the other spots on the offensive line, but I think if you can at least lock up center and left tackle and have your foundation there, can kind of start to solve some other problems. And truthfully, like, this was a horrific run blocking team for the past 2 years. And I think Barton kind of comes in and immediately helps fix that. So I like the pick. Again, this is a team that's like a little bit in limbo. So I kind of like the idea of just like, let's get a simple building block that we know wherever this team goes direction wise, this is something we can build with.
Yeah, Graham Barton, one of the really interesting players from our offensive line study, just off the charts stood out in terms of his ability to finish, in terms of relative to what we would expect from other players. Brutally bad in terms of body control and hand use. Also really good anchor he stood out for in play strength. The play-by-play measures of when he was flashing these traits really, really correlate well with, like, if you watched him, the type of player that he is on film. If you want to run duo, if you want to beat people up, like, this is your dude. If you want to have him pass protect on an island, you are going to set him up to fail. I see him as an interior player. I like him a little bit better as a guard than a center because I wasn't sure about it athletically from there. But, you know, we're splitting hairs here. And to an extent, I know Nathan Cooper, for example, thinks he's a five-position player up there. So, nice pick at this point in the first round.
Darius Robinson, Missouri edge to the Cardinals. I do not like it. I am not a fan of, like, I'm not a fan of the, like...
This is the thing. I think I can be a fan of them in certain spots and in certain ranges of the draft. This, to me, felt very much like a Josh Pascal, or Pashal, however you say it, ish player, which a couple years ago, I was like, cool. Third round, that's a sweet player to have at 27 when, I get it. Like, they absolutely needed defensive line talent. They had to pick somebody here. They have absolutely nobody going on up there. But yeah, I'm kind of with you in that. I don't love the pick, especially too. Like, Robinson is an older player and didn't really start to come on until, you know, he was 23, 24 years old. And at a certain point, you kind of just have, as a 285 pounder, you kind of just have man strength over the 20-year-olds that you're playing against. And so that aspect of it to me is a little bit concerning for his profile.
It seems like Missouri just churns these guys out.
Like, yes, this, like, this, these exact fake,
yeah,
like just fake defensive linemen. Like we had Sheldon Richardson, who was awesome. And other than that, it's just like a bunch of fake players.
Yeah, low end starter next.
Another pick I hate, Xavier. Okay, the Chiefs trade up with the Bills to get Xavier Worthy, wide receiver out of Texas. This is so painfully Andy Reid.
This is so painfully the best coach in the NFL. Go on.
I'm talking about in terms of like the way.
Right, but he's afforded himself this luxury.
Yeah.
He can do whatever the hell he wants.
I get the speed. I get falling in love with that stuff. I worry that we're repeating like a Mecole Hardman type situation. Listen, man, you don't want to talk about watching highlights, Matt. When all the highlights people post to this guy to like talk about his route running ability include like goal line whip routes and stuff, that should be a red flag to anybody.
And
just
double
moves. Highlights. Yeah, like double moves. Like I don't think the route running is really there. I think you're banking on speed. And if you want to do that, fine. But I am unwilling to pretend that this is about anything.
My biggest issue with the pick, I mean, I had like a high third round on the Xavier Worthy. I thought he was whatever. Again, he's probably in the Mecole Hardman, maybe he's something more type of tier. Maybe Darnell Mooney like is something that could make sense for him. The problem is like they signed Hollywood Brown. So what was the point of getting another player who is kind of the same thing? That's the only part of it to me that just it's bizarre about this. But again, it's
maybe it's a thought experiment. It's just
they like those thought experiments in Kansas City or Cedar, I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it is interesting. He's a really, really little guy, but super explosive, super fast. I think that if there's one thing that we can't criticize Kansas City for, it's their ability to stick to the script on like speed kills. And I think they're okay with missing on a couple Mecole Hardmans and taking a risk on, you know, getting the scrap heap on Kadarius Toney if they end up with a couple of Tyreek Hills. I kind of like that sort of like all-in mentality about how they go about it because, I don't know, I mean, you guys know how it is. Like, that's something that you really can't account for in terms of the angles and the things that you can't coach against is speed and the way it changes the angles of everything you try to do. So I get it. I agree with you. I thought he was more a third round player than anything at the end of the day, but at least they're consistent.
Thank you very much, Mr. Darius Hayward Bay apologist. The other thing I don't like about this is there's still some good tackles on the board at this point, or there were, and that's also a premium position and you need it bad. And I think you could have gotten, I talked about this with you a few weeks ago, Matt, is I think you could get, you know, for where you usually pick as the Chiefs and for where you will almost always be picking in this area of the draft, as long as Patrick Mahomes is on your team, you had the potential to maybe.
You are Kingsley. Just say you are Kingsley.
Yeah, I want Kingsley.
I would have drafted Kingsley Sumatier here. Protect the best quarterback of all time. That's my take. I know that's crazy, but.
Yeah. I watched too much Kingsley tape to feel good about him protecting Patrick Mahomes right away, but the upside is real.
So speaking of passing on Kingsley Sulamataya, Cowboys take Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma. Guyton is very far from a fit. I think he started like maybe a season's worth of games at Oklahoma. I can't remember the exact number, but not a lot of experience. There's a lot to like with the athletic profile, especially at his size, but this is a guy who has not put it together yet in the slightest. And I also think he's like even more raw than Sulamataya is. So that would have been my preference here. But I think for a guy that like fits this kind of profile where little inexperienced, the physical tools are there, I think this is fine value. I would have preferred a different flavor, but I get the pick.
It, to me, it's just boring. Cowboys take another offensive lineman. Like they do this once every 2 years, and it is what it is. They did this 2 years ago with Tyler Smith.
It's good team building.
Yeah, like it's good consistent team building. I don't really have an issue with it, so I think it's fine.
All right, we are nearing the end. We might have a bit of a jump scare for Derek at 31. I don't know if he's peaked ahead.
I have peaked ahead.
Okay, so no jump scare for Derek. Unfortunate. Nate Wiggins to the Ravens, Clemson corner. I don't hate it. I think like smaller corners, like in terms of like slightness of build, always give me a little bit of pause, but good length, good movement skills in press. I know our colleague Nathan Cooper was very high on him. I go back to the size thing, but you know, this is the Ravens we're talking about. What do I know?
I'm very much like maybe this is just like dumb guy GM type of thing, but like there are certain body types I think I would probably just never draft, which is unfortunate because like Nate Wiggins, like his tape is really good. He's a really good athlete. The length is great. He can press. Like, I mean, at Clemson, you kind of have to do that a lot. I just 173 pounds, man. Like that's in the first round. That's just a little bit rich for me. I think that's really tough. At the same time, it is the Ravens. They tend to take these guys who tend to slip a little bit or maybe weirder body types, like, you know, Tyler Linderbaum a couple years ago. Oh, he has two shorter arms to be good, and then he ended up being pretty good. So if there's any team I trust to maybe have a beat on, you know, guys with these funky body types who end up turning out good, it would be the Ravens. But 173 pounds, it's hard for me to get past that, I think.
So with the caveat that this is kind of a weird body type and you probably don't see it very often, is there a guy in the NFL right now that has this body type that is good?
No, like this skinny, I just don't think so. That's why it's concerning. Like at a certain point, you're just going to get bullied by the Mike Evanses or even like Deebo Samuel, who is like, I don't know, man, like at a certain point, you're just going to get bullied by a lot of receivers, I think.
You know, the person who comes to mind when I think of guys that are built like this is a little bit of a throwback is Rashard Robinson.
Okay. What's interesting is I think if you go back 10 years, there are a bunch of players that are kind of built like this that
so they're extinct.
But maybe they are a little bit. I'm not sure. I'm actually not sure. He's like interesting because height wise, fine, but the arm length is very short, and to go along with just him being such a light player, I don't mind a light corner. I don't mind a like that sort of thing, especially if you got a tough player like this who's shown the ability to play in press. It is an interesting question that Derek brings up because I was ready to counterpoint everything that he said in terms of like, I really like the way this guy, like what he's put on film. Like there are examples of players at any position that don't meet the exact size requirements that play football. And I think this is one of them, but that is a fair point that like, maybe these are a bit of a dying breed. I'm not sure.
The one thing I would say too, like, so to me, when I watch NFL film, Greg Newsom seems like a very skinny corner. He's like 192. If Nate Wiggins is 20 pounds skinnier than that, I'm like, that's where it gets sticky for me. Which again, is unfortunate because I do like the player, but it's just at a certain point, like NFL body type is NFL body type. And it scares me.
It's also the way the game is being called from like an officiating standpoint.
Right. Offensive players can get away with more.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long can a player like this stay healthy trying to tackle Deebo Samuel and these kind of guys? Like, I think back, like one of the skinny guys when I was scouting in the league was Tracy Porter. Good player, really good hips, kind of similar in that regard to this player. But he was a bit frail, and that caught up to him pretty quickly. So I think that's worth digging into more. That's a good little like follow-up item after the podcast.
I wonder who that will be assigned to. Okay, so Derek, one of your top players this draft.
Shut up. No.
Florida wide receiver Ricky Pearsall. Tell us all the reasons you love this guy.
Okay, so we'll do a little bit of story time with Ricky Pearsall here. When I was starting Anthony Richardson last year, Ricky Pearsall, on a technicality, was the team's best receiver, but he was not good. I think he was in the wrong spots all the time. Him and Anthony Richardson did not agree about where routes should be. I thought his hands were honestly not all that consistent. I didn't think he did a whole lot with the ball in his hands. Fast forward to this year, somehow, magically, all of that has changed. I think he's actually a pretty fluid route runner. I think there are some routes, I think especially when he has to like do outbreaking stuff and really sink, he kind of can have some issues, but I think his footwork is really good. I think generally he understands how to like bait corners into opening their hips at the wrong time and all that other sort of stuff. So I think that part of it is good with him. In terms of his hands, I don't know what happened, but he really did kind of level up in terms of being able to find the ball, especially in traffic. I mean, everyone's going to pull up that clip against like Coastal Carolina or whatever, but yeah. He actually did have a handful of other like just really impressive moments finding the ball in traffic, just clearly very concentrated, not afraid to go take a 2005 style hit over the middle of the field. So I think you can appreciate that about him. I still thought he was like a third round player, which again, like that can be useful. I think he's more of a vertical slot type, can maybe play a little bit of Z. So he's a nice player. First round was pretty rich to me, but at the same time, I'm sure Kyle Shanahan can make most players work, so it's fine.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird to take a slot in the first round. He's like, to me, I think he's a pure slot. And like, I don't know, am I getting Wes Welker here? Like it's hard to see that first round being worth it. I'll shout him out. You know, 40 unique routes, ranked fifth in this draft class, which is a pretty impressive metric for him. But I think he's, like you said, third round type prospect. Nice player to have on your team, but the first round investment, he'll probably be good.
It's Kyle Shanahan. That's the thing. If almost any other team took him, I'd be like, ah, this is crazy. But Kyle Shanahan almost has the Andy Reid buff where it's like, eh, well, he can do what he wants. I'm sure it'll work out.
The other thing I'll say is similar to the Lions in terms of team specific fit. You're like the Lions with Terry and Arnold already have a slot. So the inside outside flex doesn't matter as much. The 49ers are
so much 21.
That's what I was going to say. You get a little bit less just because you're not playing 11 personnel as much. So you just get a teeny bit less out of this pick than most teams would.
Well, I was going to say, what if they just don't next year then? Like, what if they are a lighter team this next year? Because they already started to play more from gun this year, and they already started to do, I think, more like true traditional dropback. I think it's possible that Kyle is understanding what the next evolution of his offense is with Purdy at quarterback.
He's in again, whether McVay era.
He's a little bit in his McVay era. Again, whether or not it'll work and what exactly it's going to look like, I don't know. But I think that that's kind of what's on the table here.
Interesting. So it could be an 11 personnel single back thing that they could be transitioning to.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, Kyle has always been good about changing what his offense is, like what the true foundation of it is. You know, I, like people still think of him, I think, as like the outside zone play action guy. He's really not at this point. Like his run game is a lot more varied. He plays more from shotgun now. The offense is willing to be more spread out. It's willing to be more vertical with Brock Purdy. Like there still are some core staple stuff that he does that is Shanahan to the core, but like he's very willing to adapt and change. And this to me speaks as a pick that, you know, he's trying to find whatever that next thing is.
All right. Last but not least, Panthers trade up back into the first round. They did not have a first round pick this year from their horrible, no good, awful trade for Bryce Young, who with the selection of Michael Penix Jr. became the sixth best quarterback in the NFC South tonight. They take Xavier Leggett, South Carolina wide receiver. I do not buy it, especially this early. So the production profile is weird. We have like a guy who broke out in his last year, which is always a little bit of a concern. I think the speed is nice. The yards after catch is nice. Outside of that, I don't really see him as a very polished receiver, which going back to the him being a late bloomer thing is also a little bit of a red flag to me. I don't want to say he's a gadget player necessarily, but I think envisioning him as like somebody who will become a Deebo Samuel type is maybe a bridge too far for me. I don't see the value here.
That's like the hope, right? But like that's a lot to hope for.
Okay, so the production profile stuff is weird. Again, yeah, guy who didn't break out till his last year. Definitely fast, especially for his size. I mean, he's like 220. Like, he can really move for that size. He is really good with the ball in his hands. As a route runner, it's like you said, it's not there. It's almost like the Bo Nix thing where it's like, for a five-year guy, you'd think there'd be a little bit more refinement here, and there's just really not at this point, which is pretty concerning to me. I do think his best moments of finding the ball in the air and adjusting to it and making acrobatic catches are really impressive. And I think if you can tap into that a little bit more, you might be able to see a little bit more consistent play from him. But yeah, this is to me, I think the Carolina Panthers needed more players who were like, they're going to be consistent, reliable. We know exactly what they're going to be. Like Ladd McConkey would have made more sense here to me because it's just like, okay, Ladd can get open and we know where he's going to be. Whereas Leggett, I think it's going to be a little bit trickier to get the most out of him. Like he to me is not that different of a prospect from Jonathan Mingo. I think his hands are better. I think he's a little bit more like consistent at the catch point and stuff. But just in terms of like big, strong, fast athlete, good with the ball in his hands, but not like actually a receiver yet. It feels weird that they drafted Mingo just a year ago and they're doing, granted, a little bit better version, but like more or less the same type of prospect. Just seems weird.
Yeah, I was on the Carolina radio station, Mac and Bone, they had me earlier this week, and they just wanted to ask me about which receiver Carolina could draft around this time. And I kept trying to say, like, it's probably not worth it. I actually even said, like you did, I would have gone McConkey over this player. But, like, at the end of the day here, what I love about our grading system is that it doesn't allow you to draft this level of receiver at this point in the draft, because you're going to get a player that is comparable, maybe a little bit of, okay, different flavor, but, like, you can find guys like this. You can find people who can be like your third best receiver. I don't think this is a true number one or number two. And based on our grading scale, go find offensive linemen, go find defensive linemen, get those rare positions. So I don't love this, but, you know, hopefully it can work for Bryce Young, because Lord knows they need weapons.
Yeah, sure, man.
Your boy.
You're going to be fine.
Your boy.
Everything's going to work out the way they thought it. I'm going to ask a rhetorical question, and then I'm going to release you all from your bonds so everyone can go to sleep. But is this trade up to draft a wide receiver in the first round purely a PR move to keep selling copium to Panthers fans? I think so.
Yes, 100%.
All right.
There were going to be other receivers. There's a million of them left. Jalen Polk is left. Ladd McConkey is left. Jalen McMillan is left. Like, they... there was no need to do this. I know you know, you want your guy, you go get your guy, whatever, but this is a PR move.
All right. Derek, Matt, you guys have been troopers. Thank you so much. Derek, please remind people where they can find your work.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at QBClass with a K. You can find all of my scouting reports from this draft class over at Bleacher Report. I do all the offensive skill players, even some interesting ones like Michael Penix. If you look at my grade compared to where he got drafted, I think you'll have yourself a jolly old time. And then you can go look at my quarterback charting profiles over at Reception Perception.
All right, guys, thank you so much. For my colleague, Matt Manicharian, my good friend, Derek Klassen, and our executive producer, Dustin Stein, I am Bryce Rossler. Thank you for listening to this episode of the SIS Off the Charts Football Podcast. We will see you soon.